Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening to Martin. How are you, Martin?
Thanks. I'm fine. Yourself there?
I'm good. I'm good. Listen, this is episode 61 of the Secular Foxhole Podcast, and today we have a great guest. Ken West focuses on how you can achieve a successful, balanced, and productive life. His writing covers two major themes: how to preserve, protect, and defend freedom, and how to flourish in freedom. Ken is a former paratrooper who served in Vietnam and the author of 7 books. Ken, how are you?
I'm good, I'm good, Blair. Thank you. And it's nice to hear both of you, you and Martin. So thank you. Thank you for having me in the Secular Foxhole. I appreciate it, especially on Veterans Day.
Oh, yes, that's right. Today is Veterans Day, and that is a wonderful
celebration. How do you commemorate that, Ken?
Well, in the United States, I don't particularly commemorate it because I was in Vietnam many years ago, and I have a quick story. I was in a foxhole in Vietnam, and there's an old saying about there are no atheists in a foxhole. Well, that's not true. I remember being in a foxhole where I had a little free time, and I was reading Ayn Rand's The Objectivist, which my parents used to send to me in Vietnam, and that Ayn Rand's writing kept me sane, kept me alive in many ways, because it kept my mind alive.
Intellectual ammunition also.
Absolutely. And especially, I was drafted. I didn't agree with the draft. However, I had a choice to make whether to go to jail, run after Canada, or bite the bullet and just let myself be drafted. So I was drafted, and I learned a lot by that.
Okay. Yeah, I was too young and then too old, too young to be involved in the war. And then when it finally was ended by, I guess, Nixon, more or less put an end to it, I didn't have to worry about the Selective Service or anything like that. So,
well, that's good. You're fortunate because the draft, Ayn Rand had a lot to say about the draft. And
yes, she did.
And I'll talk about my books later, but one of the books I wrote recently is more of a booklet called Mandatory National Service, A Threat to Liberty. And it deals with an extension of the draft that's been proposed where everybody, all men and women, are required to spend a year or two of service to the nation. No exceptions.
Right.
And even though right now that's not being talked about, as far as I know, I wrote the book just to help people prepare for such a thing and give them some intellectual ammunition to fight it.
Right. Let me circle back quickly, Ken, to the rest of your bio. Actually, I forgot to mention that you currently publish a newsletter on LinkedIn called Write for Your Life. And you also write for the online publication Matrix Gazette, not to be confused with the movies, I hope.
No, I didn't come up with the name. The person that I work with on this publication, who's a cartoonist, is he came up with the Matrix Gazette, and I said, okay, we'll go with it.
Okay. Now, I actually checked that out. There hasn't been that many recent articles, if I may, or did I miss something on the Matrix?
The one I just wrote. In fact, no, there's been quite a few articles.
Oh, good.
Although we were in a hiatus for a while when one of our IT person couldn't work anymore, so we ended up putting it on hold for a while. But I just recently wrote something called The Wave That Wasn't, which is about politics and about the midterm election.
Right.
And one of the things I've always been interested in is politics and political philosophy. And of course, Rand's work helped me develop my themes on that.
Yes. Yeah. Now, in the Green Room, we did talk about, you wanted to mention specifically her influence on you and your writing. Could you go into that?
Yeah, I'll be glad to. I started, what's interesting is I've always been a reader. In fact, my heroes, I think I would say most of my heroes have been writers, starting with Thomas Paine, the famous pamphleteer who wrote Common Sense. And then I discovered George Orwell, and I read 1984 and Animal Farm, and then all his other novels, lesser known novels. And even though he was a socialist, he was an honest socialist. And 1984 was a wonderful expose of what happens under totalitarianism.
The big brother.
Up until I discovered Rand, I thought, well, Orwell, I really appreciated his writing. And then one day I was in a public library and I discovered Atlas Shrugged, and I happened to pick up a copy. And I started reading, and then a week or two later, I was finished with Atlas Shrugged, and it literally changed my life. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of objectivists will say that, but what it did for me was it opened my eyes. I saw things differently. Mm-hmm. Just one quick example. I was going to Northeastern University, and I was under the co-op plan, which means you work half a year and you go to school half a year. One of my jobs was at a factory in downtown Boston, and I would have to take a bus every morning, bright and early. And I think it was during very early. So the sun was rising as I was going past the Boston Edison plant. I don't know if you're familiar with Boston, but they had all these smokestacks in the distance and the sun was hitting them. And I looked at them a lot differently than other people. In fact, most people in the bus were either sleeping or not paying attention, but I'm looking at this incredible industrial site. And I said, wow. And of course, partly that was from Rand's influence. She, in a sense, taught me to look at those things, pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. So after Atlas Shrugged, I finally read The Fountainhead, and then I read everything, and I subscribed to all her publications. And back when she did speeches at the Ford Hall Forum, I attended all of those. In fact, I had a two-word conversation with Rand once. I have to tell this quick story. I was waiting to get into Northeastern's auditorium on the night that Ayn Rand was speaking.
Okay.
And the crowds were incredibly large. People from all over the world actually came to these lectures.
Yes.
And I was at a side door because I figured I could get in, make sure I get a seat in the auditorium as opposed to one of the outside rooms. So I'm standing there in line waiting for the doors to open. And suddenly there's an entourage walking beside me, beside the line, and they stopped because the doors weren't open yet. So I turned, and right directly beside me was Ayn Rand.
Oh, my gosh.
So I can imagine that we all have thought about what would we say to Ayn Rand if we could possibly.
Yes. Oh, my. Yeah.
So I'm looking at her for 1 second. She looked at me, and all I could say was, hi. I feel so embarrassed of saying this, but that's all that came out of my mouth. And then Rand looked at me and she said, hello. And then the next thing you know, the doors opened and Ayn Rand and Peikoff and the rest of our entourage went into the auditorium. But that was my two-word conversation with Ayn Rand.
Well, I'm sure that was enough to last a lifetime, believe me.
It was, but I wish I could have spoken to her longer. I did see her again when the Ford Hall Forum did a dinner for her, an honorary dinner for her with her. She and her husband attended. It was at a Boston hotel. And Rand was one of their biggest draws, if not the biggest. So they appreciated the fact that she came there every year, and she really made the Ford Hall Forum into quite an event. So I was sitting eating dinner, and Rand and her husband, who was a very distinguished looking man, were sitting at a table. And then I realized everybody had hardcover editions of Atlas Shrugged. And I'm thinking, why are they doing this? And then I realized suddenly that Rand was going to have a book signing.
Oh, my.
So what did I do? I left the hotel, ran outside, ran across the street, almost got run over. This is on Boylston Street in Boston. And at that time, they had still had bookstores, functioning bookstores. And I went in, found a paperback copy of Atlas. They didn't have a hardcover edition. I ran back, and finally, the line had already formed, and I finally got it signed by Ayn Rand. And I still have that paperback. I wish I had had a hardcover edition, because there'd be acid-free paper, but whatever, it's there. And unlike my other copies of Atlas Shrugged, I don't write in that one.
Obviously, yes, so. No.
So beyond that, I was Rand, of course, has, as with all of us, her ideas, her philosophy, her personality, everything about Rand. She influenced in every my life in every way, and I made a mistake. I've always wanted to be a writer. I made a mistake of trying to write like Ayn Rand.
Mm.
And it's always a big mistake to try to copy somebody else's. You know, she is unique.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I want to stop for a minute and let you.
I was just going to continue on the theme of, you know, how she influenced you in writing. I mean, after your initial foray where you tried to copy her, what did you learn about that, and how did you self-correct, if you will?
Well, eventually I realized I couldn't. It was a mistake to write like her. It sounded phony. Mm-hmm. Because it was me. But what I did realize is that I could. I had enough knowledge, enough interest, that if I was willing to write something. Now, here's the real key about writing. A lot of people think that when they start writing, they have to be perfect right off the bat. It doesn't work that way. A first draft is, you know, you don't just sit down and write a masterpiece. You start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think what finally got me to really write, because I was here where I was a writer, but I wasn't writing enough. I ended up finding a book. This was not by Rand, a book called The Right to Write. And I mentioned it only because it was an important book. It's not by an objectivist. In fact, it's probably a reverse of objectivist. But her suggestion in the book was to buy a journal, get a fountain pen, and write in it every day, every morning. And you can't, there's no wrong way to do it. You just start writing. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that. And that was over 20 years ago. And now I'm on journal number 89.
Oh my.
Currently. And because every single day I have written something, and sometimes it's just, you know, whatever's on the top of my head. Sometimes it's, whatever it is, it gives you, you strengthen your ability to write. Now, the way Rand influences me is her ideas, her philosophy. When I wrote Get What You Want, up until I read Rand, I didn't understand this, the idea of the primacy of consciousness and the primacy of existence.
Okay.
And the primacy, I've noticed that. Well, let me backtrack it just a minute. I wrote Get What You Want after I had been summarily fired from a job many, many years ago. And that was in 2009. And I didn't know what to do. At the time, the job market wasn't a good one. So I started putting together what my thoughts on what I started analyzing myself. So I created a process where you self-analyze, and then you come up with a plan, find out what's really, truly important to you, and then come up with a plan to achieve it and take action. Now, I mention this because at the time, I don't know if you've read a lot of self-help books, but I have. And okay. most of them come from a primacy of consciousness viewpoint, whereas, you know, just positive thinking or just imagine. There's nothing wrong with imagining things, but the real key is to find out what the reality is and base your decisions on reality, reality of your own values and the reality of what's available. So I think when I wrote Get What You Want, it's one of the few self-help books that's written from a primacy of existence viewpoint, where nothing in this is wishful thinking. It's more, what do I want? Why do I want it? And how am I going to get it? And what steps am I going to take to do it? So that's, and I've used this particular book, that process, I used it to actually publish the book. And that's how it came out. I used my own process that I was developing, said, I want to start writing books. And so that's how that came about.
Well, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
And again, it's Rand's writing, again, her writing always is, her thoughts and her philosophy always are in the back of my mind. They're always behind. They're just in everything I do.
Yes, I think most of us try to live like that, actually. I mean, but we obviously use our own interpretation of that, or as much as we can.
Correct.
Because we are individuals. I mean, we can't, I don't denigrate myself because I don't have orange hair, which has happened.
Let's hope not. I know that has actually happened.
Those kinds of strange things. But
so what helped my writing process also is after that, I had attended an objectivist conference, and during that conference, Richard Salzman was there. He's one of the speakers. Yep. So I ended up. He was running the Association of Objectivist Businessmen, and he was also the writer for their AOB News. And yep. I saw him and I thought to myself, I'm not the most outgoing person in the world, but I thought, let me just go talk to him and say I enjoyed his lecture, and which is what I did. So he started talking to me, and I found out that he lived in the next town over from me. I lived in Beverly, Massachusetts. He lived in another adjoining town. And I told him at the time I was the president of the New England Speakers Association. I may be an introvert, but I learned that introverts can be great speakers if they want to be.
Nice.
So after speaking with him for a while, he called me a few days later and asked me if I'd be interested in taking over AOB and the publication. So that's what happened. So once I took it over, I discovered that I could not write like Richard Salzman. And there's the, again, thing, trying to copy somebody else's method or doesn't work that way.
Right.
But Richard had, back then they didn't have email, and well, there was email, but it was mostly people would actually send letters by snail mail. He had a whole file of letters people had sent him that he didn't really have time to respond to. And I started reading them. And people would tell, I read how people were speaking at various events, speaking out against rent control or zoning ordinances, people who had written a letter to the editor that was published in one of the local newspapers. And I looked at that material and I said, now that, if we're going to have a newsletter, why don't I start getting some of this material into the newsletter? So I ended up calling every one of those writers who I thought was worthy of being in there, and asked them if they would let me publish either what they wrote or the news about what they did, their activism. Surprisingly, nobody refused. Everybody was very keen on doing that.
Oh, nice.
So I think the one thing I did with the newsletter was get it out on time and increase the size of it. Because newsletters really should have news in them. So I focused on the news aspect, what was going on. And I discovered that in the writers that I published in AOB News were people who were applying objectivism in their life. A lot of times it was politically, but not always. Sometimes it was just somebody who changed their jobs based on realizing what they really, truly wanted to do. And it was all about application of Rand's philosophy. And that's what I focused on in AOB News.
Great.
The one problem there was I was also the president of the Association of Objectivist Businessmen. And I'm more of a writer than a businessman. At least at the time, that's what I thought. So eventually, the running of the association was taken over by a guy named Peter Murphy, who I believe now works for Richard Salzman. And I focused entirely on the newsletter. And eventually I got it up to, I was telling Martin earlier, up to 28 pages. This was a print publication. It wasn't online. And I can remember going to the post office with carts full of newsletters having to mail. They see me coming and then they kind of made space for me. And anyway, what ended up happening with AOB News is I had to, as the editor of the publication, I usually had to write an opening piece or a lead article, which I did and I enjoyed doing. And especially regarding politics, this is back when Clinton was president, and there was plenty to write about.
I was going to say, that's great. That's great, Ken. The purpose of having you on, though, was to have people hear about you and let them learn about you. But we want to have you back next year for your latest book called Your Ego, It's Your Salvation, Not Your Original Sin, which is very, very much the crux of the issue, isn't it?
It is. Yes. It is. In fact, ego has a bad rap. Most of the modern literature on ego is that ego is not your real self. Somehow ego is just this something you have to deny or squash down. And nothing can be further than the truth. Your ego is yourself. This is how it's your whole conception of yourself and what makes you an individual. Mm-hmm. In fact, Rand and both Ludwig von Mises and Rand both had great quotes on what an ego is. And it's more about egoism than just ego, but ego. The basic premise of this book is that if you want to achieve anything in life, you have to at least develop as much as possible a strong and healthy ego. Right. And many, you know, I didn't always have a strong, healthy ego in my own estimation, but I figured, okay, what is the real key to developing an ego? And partly it is understanding what it is and taking action.
Yes.
In fact, I have a quote here at the beginning of the book saying, no matter what a man was and what he may become later, in the very act of choosing and acting, he is an ego. That was Ludwig von Mises.
Okay.
So I think what the purpose of that book was to kind of rescue the idea of ego and let people know that you need a strong, healthy ego, not as opposed to what I would call an inflated or phony ego.
Right. A phony sense of self or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've always been attracted to Miss Rand's, your ego is your conscious mind. It's your, you know, so it is yourself. It's your consciousness.
It is.
And that, for me, that just blew all the cobwebs out, you know, and just, oh, wait a minute, that's what this, you know.
That is a great, that's the value of Rand. She could blow away the cobwebs quite effectively. And that's the wonderful thing about Ayn Rand.
You know, and it's, although our podcast is one of many in the objectivist world, sadly, objectivism itself still has barely a toehold in the culture. I mean, I guess we're gaining in a certain sense because, you know, millions and millions of people have read her, but that's it. They'll read the novels and, oh, those were great. But they don't only like one in a million go look at her ideas behind
them. That could be true, Blair. I have a slightly different take on that, because a lot of people living, I'll give you one quick example. The company I work for now part-time, the former chairman and founder of the company, she founded it in 1984, and she was in New York City in Manhattan, and she found a copy of Atlas Shrugged and read it. Somehow she could not put it down. She didn't sleep. She just read it. And as soon as she finished that book, she started a company.
Wow.
I think perhaps it was Dagny Taggett alone is such a great role model. I remember hearing a Boston broadcaster one time on the television mention that the image of Dagny Taggett, the character of Dagny Taggett, gave her the courage to pursue her career in broadcasting. Nice. So I don't know if you remember Trump, when Trump had his Secretary of State, who ended up leaving, probably couldn't stand with Trump. His favorite book, he had said, was Atlas Shrugged. So there's a hidden, there's an underground.
Yes, there is.
Of individuals who are living their life, and they're motivated by Rand's ideas, but it doesn't mean they're all involved in politically, or, you know, the politics is the last thing we're going to see.
Right. True. True. Yeah. I mean, that's
and aesthetically, when you look at, yes, there's horror shows up there, but look at some of the objective art, the wonderful art that's coming out of a guy named John Wass. I don't know if you familiar with him, and other there's some incredible
Kodera art, at the huge gallery.
That's true.
And then look at all the conferences going on. There's Craig Biddle's concerts, the Ayn Rand Institute's conferences, the Atlas Society. There's so many, and they're all it's too bad they can't, you know, that it's
they
too
can't
bad.
Combine forces.
Yeah, I know.
Well, but still, you're right, though. There are some currents going the positive way. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I believe I certainly believe so. And it doesn't I think, in fact, if Rand was still alive, she should be. You know, she was a great reader of the news. I mean, she read everything, including the New Yorker, the New York Times. Yes. And she got a lot of her material from reading understanding the reality of the political climate at the time and the cultural climate.
Yes.
And you may not realize this. One of the popular authors today, I think he's now gone. I mean, he's still writing. Dean Koontz.
Oh,
he's written. Of course, he writes semi horror stories, but he writes hundreds of books. Well, I read something that he wrote many, many years ago, saying that Rand was one of the great thinkers, and at some point in the future, her ideas are going to make a tremendous difference. So I thought that was interesting to read from just this popular author.
Yeah, that is good. No, I had not known that. Yeah.
And Ken, that could maybe be for next time also, but as ending here, when what you are doing right now in business, and also you see the potential with this Association of Objectivist Businessmen, maybe in a new format, a new version and a development, and you see lots of entrepreneurs that question that Rand is inspiration, it's reading, it's on the bookshelf. So, for example, like a podcast, like Entrepreneurs on Fire, I think they have a top list of books. And when I did a search there, it was plenty of their guests there that recommended Rand's books.
Yes, and you, Martin, are doing a tremendous job with Lyceum, and you were on the forefront of this.
Yeah, it was my friend Jerry and others, and started the magazine, and we had it at the big book fair in Gothenburg, And then, but then the internet came along also. So, and that's what I say. Now it's easier to find. It could be a jungle out there, but it's easier. But yeah, you do it in different ways, in division of labor. And here I could find it now with the podcasting and then podcast. So yeah.
And what's wonderful about the internet is I was speaking to you before the show is that if you want to publish a book, self-publishing now is probably extremely easy, relatively speaking. Yep. What's difficult is writing a book, having a clear idea of who your audience is, and writing a book that people will want to read and pay for. So it's not of the 7 books I have out, some of them are doing well, others are just sitting there, but the physical act of publishing them as a self-publisher is relatively simple. In fact, I've written some articles about that are available on that newsletter that you mentioned, the LinkedIn Write for Your Life newsletter. I have devoted that to how do you write more, how do you publish what you write, and how do you monetize what you write. And that's my focus on that newsletter. And I encourage anybody, the newsletter is free, to please take a look at it if you're on LinkedIn.
All right.
And as far as the Matrix Gazette, that's more of a political and social commentary. And it's a mixed bag, but I think I enjoy writing about politics. In fact, I bring at the back of my mind and everything I write is the idea of how do we encourage freedom? How do we get people to be to realize the danger of big government? Of course, we see it all the time now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but the unity of big business and big government.
It's funny. In Atlas Shrugged, of course, Rand showed quite clearly the difference between the business people who were government, who basically made the backroom deals.
Yes.
The
cronies.
The man in Washington.
The capitalist cronies, as opposed to Hank Reardon and others. Almost all, when you think about business heroes, in fact, I think it was Jobs and Musk and various others, almost all of them have been motivated by Rand. When they give a summary of what books have made the most impact on their life, an incredible number of entrepreneurs have mentioned Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead. So her influence is there, and we can feel it even today with the secular foxhole. I mean, you have a wonderful broadcast here. You've had some incredible guests.
I'm glad
you're doing it.
So are we. But speaking of that, I do have some previous engagements that I do have to prepare for.
Understood.
But it was today's guest, ladies and gentlemen, has been Ken West, author, businessman, and objectivist. Ken, thanks for manning the foxhole with us today.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure, Blair. Thank you. And thank you, Martin.
Thanks. And I will do a cliffhanger here. So for next time, then, what would you bring to the foxhole? Very short, then, Ken. Well, as a copper pot objectivist.
Okay.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much. And
thank you very much.
We look forward to having you hopefully in January, Ken.
Yeah.
Thank you, Blair. I look forward to that.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye for now.